Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the AI Boardroom. And with me again, my wonderful co-host Svetlana. Tell us about today's topic.
Yeah, today we wanted to talk about how ChatGPT and some of the recent releases that OpenAI had announced in the last couple of weeks, and how that is redefining the human to AI interaction. And what does that mean to you, business owners? And I'd say, you know,
maybe everyone out there. Maybe everyone out there, but mostly you business owners.
And I think that some important topics will go into like the practical all the way to conceptual. So yeah, if you're interested in hearing more, stick around. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would just try to introduce this today's topic a bit by just trying to talk about what ways of communication are there. Also a bit what my experience of different interactions with AI are, because some of them are cool on paper, are cool in demos, not that cool in practice, which a lot of it comes down to what people are used to. And for me, I have an AI solution, which is basically a chatbot. Does a bit something with images, but it's still a chatbot. I am totally capable for some time now to do voice and to do real-time voice. And I didn't do it because people are not used to it. And even me, like I'm getting used to it, but even me, like I'm a digital native. I grew up with computers. I built my first computer. I was 10. I really dig the whole AI stuff, and still like the chat interaction is like feeling the most natural to me, and I'm still hesitant talking to my AI in a conversational manner.
But is it because you've been burned by, you know, the technology that maybe wasn't capable enough for you to carry on the conversations?
Siri didn't help, to be honest.
But, I think that's what's probably messing a lot of folks up and adopting, you know, some of this voice technology because of Siri and these Alexa. I mean, Google Home and everything like that. They're unable to carry on the conversation.
Alexa is actually a good experience from day one. It's not perfect, but it's really fast. It's just activated.
You want to talk to me, huh?
Just seeing the blue light in the corner of my eye. that's the better experience. Also, Google Assistant is also a really usable experience for quite some time now. It's mostly Apple that didn't update Siri since 2015 or something.
Yeah.
But rumors have it this year is the year. Looking forward.
Maybe they partner with OpenAI.
I'm really rooting for it because GPT-4o integrated into iOS, deeply into iOS, on my phone. I would love that.
And everyone will have Scarlett Johansson talking back to them,
or not.
Or not. Yeah, we'll see.
Let's see how the judge decides. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I found that older people, like in their 50s, even 60s, they don't use the keyboard as much because they are not as fast in typing, and they use voice to type a lot. Wait a second. Keep going.
was that about a sneeze coming on? But I think that's a good point. Depends on people's maturity, as you mentioned. Like, have they grown up with this technology and what their comfort level is? But I would argue that we shouldn't be building technology for the people today, because it's the technology who's going to be most used by is millennials and probably the upcoming generations who were born into the technology. So they're much more likely to. Like, my kids are growing up with Alexa. We have both Alexa and Google Home, and they go and mind you, they don't speak English. They still try to, like, they learn English with Alexa and Google Home because they are motivated to, like, conversate with her. Like, if they want something to get done, like, they go and they learn whatever task that needs to be completed. So there's, I think, an emotional, like, not emotional, but there's a need And people will go out of their way to, like in my kid's case, actually learn the language to be able to take advantage of the system. So again, I think always designing for people that, you know, of today is probably not the best mentality, but I do think that over time, voice will become
the people today
native
are,
experience.
The people today are most of the people, so you cannot ignore them.
That's true. That's true. That's a good point.
And you have to, like, it's not that it's the majority, it's not the minority. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. You have to keep in mind that there will be a skill set, a new skill set that is needed for the future of technology. Always has been like that, but still we have to at least show people a path to easily get on the train and to not jump on the running thing, like one thing that I think also is an issue is the whole notion of it being clunky and kind of like, yeah, not really responsive, not really natural. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where the latest updates of Google and OpenAI and Microsoft and everyone came in, like multimodality and also small models that are like can be executed on your device. All of that gives you a new frame, a new canvas, basically, to work on. And this canvas is latency free. It gets your emotions. It is really, really starting to become helpful by quite a margin, and that's what's getting up to us. And to be honest, mm-hmm. I'm a bit disappointed. I'm still not able to use the new voice experience of ChatGPT because I'm really looking forward to it. Because it got.
And I think the one that you missed is actually starting to exhibit emotions too. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And personality, right. and things like that. So it's two sided. So it's
stuff
not
that
only
fits
interpret.
Also, yeah. Right. So yeah. There's last week was Microsoft's Build mm-hmm. conference, which is Microsoft Developer Conference, and they showed a demo of GPT-4o integration into Windows or into Copilot mm-hmm. for that matter, and they were they had a screen share running. And mm-hmm. the AI was watching the screen, basically. And they were playing Minecraft, and it gave live updates on the Minecraft game. And then he in the game, he turned around and said, "Oh, what's that?" And then the AI was, like, with a, like, urgency, a lot of urgency was, "Hey, it's a zombie. Go away. Find something to hide, a shelter," or something. And it gave it, like, really actual usable advice in an urgent tone, which was also in a latency, which was ridiculous. Like, really, it wasn't sped up. It was kind of a live recording. Interesting, really interesting. So that it also opens up so many new use cases. And to be honest, like, I'm pretty sure AI is better in customer service pretty quickly than most of the customer service people are, just in terms of always being polite, never being in a bad mood, always having all the answers that are available.
So, yeah, and you only need one ChatGPT 4.0 model than 20, you know, agents being live, because it's available 24/7. Yeah.
It's a huge opportunity, I find myself more and more rooting for companies to add AI to their service customer communications, because mm-hmm. Honestly, like, I know the information I want is really mundane, but I need it. Why can't an AI explain it to me? Just go ahead, launch the stuff, honestly.
And I think with even, like, my experience calling agents, like, the one thing that I hate doing, and if I can figure it out on my own, I would always, you know, go through the website and try to find the answer, control F, if there's no agent, chatbot available. I dread calling the 1-800 number because I'm like, oh, and it's going to ask me 500 times to like press these buttons.
Yeah.
And it's going to send me
if you want the reception, press 1. If you want the reception like, in know, English, just... press 2. If you want the reception in Dutch, press 3.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah. And I just have such a bad experiences that I think if you can, if your experience was call the 1-800 number and you immediately talk to someone who doesn't care what prompts you ask, like it's going to handle all of your numbers and select. I mean, that's huge, I think, for folks. One of the other use cases that I think I'm really excited about, which is like outside of customer service, but like any products and services, whether it's like an Alexa type of speaker or like a personal robot, whatever, have you being embedded with these AIs, because we're talking about like, you know, this human to AI interaction, or elder population, because a lot of them are aging in their homes.
Yeah.
And they are by themselves oftentimes, and they don't see a lot of people kind of in their day to day. And they've started to adopt, you know, these like robotic pets that of course don't talk. Sometimes I've worked on some products that actually, this is true, and we've done some research on this, that they talk to Alexa as if it was a person because they had very minimal interaction. How cool would it be if they had access to this ChatGPT 4.0 Omni, you know, version like Sky? They would carry on like a full conversation. Like
definitely, I would too. Oftentimes, I'm lately, like last years, I'm not really good at following through on my personal goals, like eating behavior, stuff like that. And like just like having the AI know that and just talk to it about that, just to get some reflection on my own thoughts, I think that could be hugely valuable.
Now that it has video, it can be like, Edgar, put that cake down.
Don't go to that restaurant. You know you don't. Want Burger King.
We both know what you're going to order.
Or put in random fast food name here.
No, accountability, I think, is going to be also huge because it can have that longer term memory to understand your goals and then have like track your progress towards them. So I think that the use cases and the possibilities, like you can integrate that into an app and have the LLM kind of run the tracking with the voice and kind of like this personality that again you rely on. You don't need a coach. You don't need like an accountability partner when you have you know, access to a powerful tool like this.
Yeah. And then he takes your ransom with your browser history. I would love to take like a small step back. GPT-4o it's the new model of OpenAI. For you that didn't know, your ChatGPT got a lot better lately. That's because of the new model. The GPT-4o model is not released to its full capabilities as of now, but will be in the upcoming weeks, as far at least as they say. And O stands for Omni, and Omni meaning multi-channel or multi-modality. And what is multimodality in the first place? So right now, chat with AI was mostly like I type in text and it gives me text back. It's a large language model in the end. So yeah, of course, like, it's trained on a lot of text data. Multimodal models are able to not only read text, but also stuff like images, or in the case of GPT-4o, also audio natively. Because right now you could also like in the old version, you could talk you could talk to ChatGPT and you could get a talking answer back. But this was basically taking your voice, running through another model, making text from the voice, putting it into the inference, like the text to text. Giving text back, this text is then synthesized back with the voice to give you like the voice answer, the audio answer. Now you give audio in, it gives audio out. And it gives video in, it gives audio out. And that's also the beauty of it. Like if it's multimodal, you can like switch between modalities basically. And That's a huge leap. What it gives you is recognition of speaker recognition. Recognize that there are different people speaking. It's the ability to interrupt, which was shown a lot in the GPT-4o demos. Mm-hmm. Give the AI the option to get the information in between the content, which is your tone. Do you speak in a loud voice? Are you anxious? Whatever, like it gets the feeling, the like non-spoken part of the audio. And that's I think that's hugely valuable to get even better applications that also have a low latency, because you don't have to do all the transformation steps and the answer comes quickly. And that's what we also seen in the demo of GPT-4o.
I think with one other benefit that I'm surprised you aren't speaking of, because I think out of the two, where you know you're the more technical of us. But if you think about historically, if this multimodal version did not exist, you would be integrating, in order to support that type of an experience, you would have multiple AI capabilities that would be a spaghetti of an architecture kind of behind the scenes, in order to kind of again support that same experience. Now you have to have one. One system, you basically select, and now you're going to have choices. I think now we have Astra from Google, we have OpenAI, but I'm sure there's going to be competitors emerging in the market. But the users of this are the ones benefit. So you'll have choices, so you don't have to think about, well, what model and how am I going to architect this and stuff like that. You kind of have to think about, like, which model am I going to insert? What are some use cases? Like, what is the experience that I want to support? And some of these tools are already available to you, and they're pretty easy to plug and play from proof of concept. I think Edgar can speak much more at length as to, like, operationalizing this tool is probably like more 90% of the effort of actually bringing it into production. But most of it, like, is very streamlined, because you're only needing to rely on one model in order to support that customer kind of like end-to-end experience. And I think that's really powerful.
And the more capable the model is, and the more it understands just from the get-go, the easier it is for you to just prepare the right context. And also, you have more context from the same data if you want to. So because you had audio, you had the audio signal before, but you could only take the text from it. You couldn't take emotions from it without, like, there was also, there's, I think, Hume AI. They are pretty huge in recognizing emotions from any modality, basically. And you could also, like, take into consideration that, but you would only build text from that, and also get the answer out as text, which then has to be translated. So and of course, the less moving parts you have, the better. Always was like that. Always will be. Having one model which can do it all gives you the ability to do more with what you have already. And, and generally, like, have use cases that they haven't even dreamed of.
And there has been a lot of discussion, which I think you're really strong in, is agentic AI. And following Google Next, there was like a huge, you know, talk. And I think the word agentic AI has been trending ever since. They even released, like, you know, use cases that these companies, you know, their customers are using, you know, Google's technology and some of the models they make available through their cloud technology. But I think, you know, none of the use cases actually came close to what the potential with the 4o is going to enable you with agentic AI. What do you think the 4o will enable us to do more of from a perspective of productivity, and how kind of you envision maybe even businesses using it, maybe internally even? Like, is that an option? What are your thoughts?
So, So generally speaking, that's a really good question. Because one thing that GPT-4o is worse than the model before is reasoning. And reasoning capabilities are hugely important for agentic behavior, because the model has to decide based on reason what to do with the given information and how to plan out and stuff like that. So the worse your model is in reasoning, the worse it will perform on agentic tasks, and the performance, like if you go even a little bit beyond easiest task, will give you poor results as of now. That said, the having a better zero-shot performance, which definitely is the case in this GPT-4o model, because of course you can hand over the same data, like I said, the same audio file you had before, but it just gets you a better zero-shot result. That's hugely useful, because then you have to do less calls to the AI, which if you build any application, of course will help you. The AI itself gets faster. The result, you get a faster result because like you have only to do it once, but then it goes back to the reasoning part. It might fail on like executing the tasks and sticking with the plan because it hallucinates somewhere along the way, and then errors compound and it breaks or influences the outcome in a bad way. So like from an application building perspective, you definitely have more options. And honestly, I'm close to every day look up if there is any news on when actually the API will allow me to send audio and get audio back. Because the applications are really huge. If you can combine it with image generation, which also will be a part of that multimodality, because you can now, you don't need DALL-E 3 for image generation because the model itself can do it. So right now you would say, ChatGPT, give me a prompt for that. And then you would take that prompt and put it into Midjourney and get the image. Now you just get out what you want and get the image back from the same model. And all that is really hugely beneficial if you want to build applications, because I told it a lot in the past episodes. I told it a lot on LinkedIn. It's all about context.
Yeah.
And the better you can use your context, and the better you understand your context, the better the result is.
And the better you can automate the tasks, I'm assuming. So is that kind of where you're leading? Yep.
Yeah. And more tasks, because I spoke to a company which is doing real-time voice on a telephone already as of now, before GPT-4o and everything. And they have to add stuff like ums and keyboard typing to just bridge the time the inference takes.
Yeah,
they got it pretty low. I give them that, but it's not instant. So it's not like a real conversation. These applications might have been possible already, but they get really, really humanized, basically, with this new release.
And I think that's that's really interesting, because I think with we talk about like the lines blurring ultimately between the humans and AI, because we're adding these things that production of podcasts, videos that you watch on YouTube, like that's ultimately what, you know, there's systems that are developed to remove the ums and the ifs, because like that's just our normal tendency to like speak that way. Or like my tendency is always to start like, what's so? So you have these additional, you know, these additional keywords that you're not keywords, but words that you add in your normal conversations that we're now adding to AI for it to sound more human-like, which I think interesting. Or as you mentioned, like typing behind the scenes, because again, these are the things that we hear. So at some point, we even started to experience this with, there's been a lot of discussions with character AI. Now people starting to form bonds with these avatars that people are creating because, you know, they've created and they chat with them. Like, just think about the potential of having a voice, you know, kind of AI agent basically speaking to you with all of these additional kind of more human-like interactions. I think we're probably going to hear more on this once the AI system is released, but I do anticipate that people are going to start forming bonds with this AI, I mentioned, like people who are lonely, people who, you know, maybe taking the system even to the extreme of developing a relationship with
I'm already like thanking it, basically.
You are.
like this is so natural language that I kind of feel inclined to do what I'm like raised to, and that's being polite. it's weird, but in the end, as it gets emotions now, I should.
You better thank Sky.
Better thank Sky, yeah.
Before you leave.
But yeah, like you said, the line gets pretty blurry. I'm already at a point where I would love to just speak to an AI, because oftentimes humans don't do a good job with random situations if they're not highly skilled to deal with them.
But if you think about also, like, there's research, and I actually wrote like an article, I have a blog post on humanizing AI. I think it's interesting that people develop a form of bond, and they actually trust it, because, you know, one of the things why, you know, kind of going to a therapist, like there's not as many people going to a therapist because they're like, oh, what is this? What if I say something and people are going to think badly of me? Or I don't want to disclose this because it's going to end up, I don't know. And they're going to form like a, you know, the wrong picture of why, you know, my motivations were such. But now you have AI. So what if you taught it to be like not judgmental, or like I could truly be open to this agent? I mean, with some caveats that like my information will not be shared and it'll be anonymous, but like you can truly use this for like therapies and being a psychologist, because it could recommend some of the same principles that these therapists, again, like people are going to hate me for saying this, but like some of the things that maybe on like mild cases, like the day-to-day therapy, just to keep your kind of mind flowing or inspired, there's certain things that I think AI could be delegated to do. And then there's certain things where, you know, you are going to need more hands-on like therapy, deep dive sessions that AI cannot handle. But I think that you're going to get, it's an opportunity, I think, for people to have this bond to be more open, which they otherwise would not either seek help or would not even have anyone else to talk to and kind of voice out their concerns or get help. So,
To be completely honest, I was with the current AI voice integration of ChatGPT already at a point where sometimes I drive home, like I have a thought, I wasn't able to do it on my notebook, and on the way home, I just used the speech like the microphone system in my car. Mm-hmm. I talked to it and tried to conversate properly. And now I can also interrupt it if I have the feeling it misunderstood me without pressing any buttons whatsoever and being able to edit. One thing also ChatGPT related is it uses it, or like they added memory across different conversations if you want to. And this is also hugely helpful because it starts building up like a knowledge base about you and what you talked about and stuff like that. And that's where it gets me excited. Also, Microsoft did this recall function Windows, which we will talk about in at another episode, I guess. AI needs context to really feel like a personal assistant. It needs to know you. It needs to know what you do. And the more it knows, the more you're exposed, of course, but the more it can help you. Because otherwise, if it doesn't know what I'm talking about most of the time, how should it help me, right?
And I think it's only fair, right? So if I was thinking about this the other day. So if you go out of the blue without signing in and without AI, OpenAI even knowing your context, you're just going to prompt the system to be like, hey, what color should I choose between this dress and this dress? And you upload like a picture of the dress. How should it know how to answer? It's just going to be like an arbitrary choice, which is similarly like you walking up to a stranger without that person like understanding who you are, what you stand for, what your preferences are. You're just going to be like, hey, what dress can I choose? it's going to basically, that person is going to rely on their own experience and they're going to provide their preferences. In this case, large language models just give you the average tendency. So it's like they just rely on kind of its knowledge base to give you the recommendations.
Yep.
So if you want a much more personalized output, you kind of have to, like, similarly to the stranger, to like give them at least a little bit of your life story and like your preferences in order for them to have a contextual feedback, something that's helpful to you. So I do think that providing that context, whether it's with system prompting or whatever have you, or through this kind of conversational history, you're truly building this context about what your preferences are, what you stand behind, and like what kind of questions you tend to like gravitate towards, and or how you're following up on, like, you know, fine-tuning the responses, or maybe iterating on the responses. So it's learning some of these things, and that's kind of the power of AI, to be able to do that at, like, infinitely, and to be able to kind of handle it for different people. But that's kind of the power of personalization. But you have to provide that context in order, if you want a much more accurate response that will make you happy. So in a way, I think that's like a fair ask.
And also to all the business leaders out there, or like project leaders for AI projects, same for you. Like, the more information you gather, the more information you also curate, or let it be curated by the AI. Like, if you want to know how this works, like, feel free to ask. Because if AI is building up memory, it can structure it in a way where it can be recalled easily. And also be already prepared to be recalled better than if it would be the plain text. Mm-hmm. And also stuff like context gives you the option to rephrase a question. So you have a context which might be only your chat history from the actual chat, or like the current chat. And then you go ahead and then you get a new question, like you were talking about the dresses, like... And then your next question would be like, and what about a scarf, for example?
Yeah.
And then AI goes ahead, looks at the your history, and then it can rephrase the question. It's like, what scarf would be good for a dress which is in that or that color, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And then it rephrases the question for itself before it does the actual inference, and that's how you can technically solve make context and more context usable by looking at what's getting in, looking at what is around it, and just rephrase what is in there to get a more precise answer. And that's how you get rid of hallucinations. That's how you get rid of false information. That's how you get proper grounding for your information to be really accurate. It's not perfect by any means, and you need a lot of tuning to get this dialed in and right, but it's hugely helpful.
Yeah, totally agree. If you enjoy this episode, would love for us to dive into any particular agents. So I know that we covered about, you know, ChatGPT, we focused on 4.0 and kind of the multimodality that it now offers. But if you want us to kind of talk to you about maybe a specific use case around sales, marketing, and kind of lay out the groundwork, maybe with some tangible use cases, happy to do it. As we always say, we want to grow with you, and we want to deliver content that you find useful. So let us know in the comments if there's a particular topic you'd like to for us to do a deep dive on. But
also,
don't forget to subscribe.
If you want to do want us to do this live on stream in a session where you can ask live questions, just let us know down in the comments. And that's it for today, I would say.
Well, don't forget to subscribe again, as I mentioned, like this video, and I guess we'll see you on the next one.
See you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.